This recording is made in Viroqua, Wisconsin, May 2nd, 1950, of a group of citizens of Vernon County. The first speaker will be Mr. L.J. Wood.
People came from New York. They settled first down at Rome, in Jefferson County, and later moved to what at that time was known as Seelyburg. Seely's operated the mill and lumber camps, rafting of lumber down the river. And I think Dad was about 6 years old when they came here. Mother, folks came from Ohio. They were Buckeyes, as they called them in those days, and they settled first out here at Viroqua on the farm owned by this old fella. It's a lawyer, a real old fella.
To you.
I don't remember the name now. It's got away from it. It's not far out here, someplace in Viroqua. Mother's name was Garrett. Will Garrett was a cousin of hers. And they lived in Lafarge in Seelyburg, or what was afterwards known as Lafarge, for all these years up till father passed away about 4 years ago, 93. And in those days, why, there wasn't any roads. It took all day with a wagon and a team to come to Viroqua and back. They'd have to start about 4 or 5 in the morning, and it'd be 8 or 9 o'clock at night when they'd get home again. As a boy, I used to come along once in a while, and I remember we'd have our dinner down in Pete, No, a store. Some fella had operated a store down here. Nelson, was it?
Probably.
Of course, I've lived back where there wasn't any roads, no railroads, no high schools, any place except Viroqua is the nearest one. Seen the land all cleared up. Helped build the railroad into Lafarge, which we've been abandoned since. Lived to see oxen. Transportation over in our section was mainly by oxen back in those days. Down to the automobile, airplane. I don't know just what you want to hear.
Just wonderful.
Okay. The sawmill is being operated by Dempster Seely and son. Rafted their, cut their trees, sawed their lumber, rafted it into rafts, which was run to Viola, over the dam at Viola, then to Soldiers Grove, over the dam at Soldiers Grove, at Gaze Mills, over the dam at Gaze Mills, to Wauzeka, into the Wisconsin River, down the Wisconsin, into the Mississippi, down to Dubuque, Devonport, Burlington, Galena. We pulled rafts up the river at Galena, Fever River, 5 miles up. And after the lumber was pretty well taken out, why, they rafted ties, tie rafts. And they were run to, sometime to Lyons, Dubuque. Later they were run to Soldiers Grove and pulled out of the river and put on the railroad and the train, the cars at that place. Started way long time before my time.
Oh, yes, go ahead.
Yeah. The operation of this rafting in the rivers had been carried on by Seeley's crews years before my time. And and about the age of 14, I commenced making trips myself, and this continued up till about 1898. That was the outbreak of the Spanish-American War. I enlisted and served through the Spanish-American War and re-enlisted, went to the Philippines for the Philippine insurrection from about 1899 to 1901. Being mustered out at Presidio, California. We served through the southern part of the islands, Swan's expedition, in the cordon around Manila. The first settlement in that section was known as Seeleyburg, which contained several houses, Seeley Sawmill, General Store, Doctor. And later on, a mile south of Seeleyburg, the village of Lafarge was incorporated, and people from Seeleyburg moved to Lafarge. And I have lived through the period where all the buildings which now stand in the village of Lafarge have been built on the farms owned by D.H. Bean, A.W. DeJanes, and John Bailey. The village now contains a population of about 1,200 people. The railroad was organized by people in the state of Wisconsin. It was first built from Waseca to Soldier's Grove, and later from Soldier's Grove to Lafarge. On account of extreme floods, washout, sometimes lasting for a period of 30 days, the railroad company asked that the road be abandoned. We organized and fought the proposition as hard as we could, but failed. The road was taken out. We took our organization and worked through Madison to the legislature to get a bill to add 500 miles onto the state trunk highway system to have a highway marked into Lafarge so we could get our supplies. After some time, this was accomplished, and the road was marked as the state highway from Waseca to Lafarge. Later on, we got this state highway extended through to Tomah. And the roads which we used to travel ankle deep in sand are now blacktopped, and our roads are in fairly good condition, with the exception of 131 north out of Lafarge, for which a contract is being let today by the Highway Commission for some new bridges and the blacktop road 6 miles to Rockton. We've also been working on a flood control project. The government has already done all the engineering work. This was before the war, during which time nothing was done and the proposition was fairly lost. Later on, we managed to dig it up, and we have a promise from the Army engineers that this will be out of the St. Paul office next March. From there, it has to go to the Army Engineers headquarters in St. Louis, passed upon by them, back to the engineers in Washington, of the Rivers and Harbors Committee. From there it goes to the governor of the state of Wisconsin for his approval, back to Washington for an appropriation. Well, another time, don't this on the record too, another time I was president of the village down there, they wanted to put in waterworks.
Sure.
Well, they got up a petition, we was building sidewalks. I was just a young stripper, and they had never done much, and so we started building sidewalks. Banker George State went out, got up a petition to put in a water system. This is off the record now. And, well, the question come up about the bonds, you know. And they held us up and wanted a little more interest on the bonds, and so C.J. Smith over here was our attorney, and he said, why don't you get out of Addison and get that money from Munson and Davidson? So we did. We went down to see them, and they said, well, unless there ain't any money here now, but there will be the first year, and we'll see your name goes on the list. We had it all the ground buried up, nobody to pay for it. we got the money.
Go ahead with your about the
farming. Well, in the early days, the people that located near Lafarge mostly were not looking for farmland. They were looking for timber and water. Nearly all of them settled by a big spring and some big trees. Later on, they started clearing up small farms, and this condition existed for some years, until the dairy cow was introduced into the Kickapoo Valley and people began to chop, clear up the hillside, clear up the land. Banks were willing to lend money to buy cows. And the farms increased until some very nice farms now exist. And during this period, some people from down at Stoughton discovered that the valley land in the Kickapoo Valley was the very best land for raising tobacco. And a lot of people from around Stoughton moved into Kickapoo Valley. They built back tobacco sheds and started raising tobacco, which is carried on to this date very extensively over there. And as I am told, we raise practically the best grade of tobacco that they can find.
How did you start the dairy?
Well, the dairy cows, they started with few cows and kept increasing till nearly every farm was principally in the dairy business, main industry. All of this was carried on by hand. No milking machines existed at that time. Cheese factories were located at certain points. Farmers all had to haul their milk to the factory. Then once a week, somebody had to haul the cheese to market. This was carried on for years until we found out that they'd come and get the cheese. So that today, the main industry in the Kickapoo Valley are dairying and tobacco. Well, my political experience started back in about 1903 when I was elected mayor, village president of the village of Florge, and I was a young man. We started in and built the first cement sidewalks. And the banker, Mr. Tate, got up a petition to install water and sewer system. Covering Main Street at that time an expense of $15,000. Later on, I was elected on the school board in Florge to serve, I think, 5 years, and moved out, moving back to Florge. I operated as manager of the light plant for 15 or 20 years. Bought me a farm, operated my farm for a few years. Was called back to take over the light plant. Operated the plants in Viola Lafarge for around 10 years as manager. I was elected on the county board in about 21 or 2. And have served off and on for nearly 30 years. Check that off now. See, I don't. Patrolman was put on. This first patrolman was put on in about 22 or 23. And the county board, seeing the benefits of this, agreed to give any township $500, which would maintain a patrolman year round. This information was given to the division office in La Crosse, taken to the road school in Detroit, and in a short time was universal throughout the state of Wisconsin and I think perhaps the United States. Is that enough for that?
Weed control. Weed control.
The weed control proposition was started in Vernon County some 4 or 5 years back. We're not being satisfied by the system then in operation. It was organized by school districts. Each school district that would sign up at least 90% for weed control would be given $100. This seemed to prove very satisfactory and was taken up by other counties and commented very highly through the Milwaukee papers. During the time that I was manager of the light utility at Lafarge, some farmers south of the village organized a cooperative light company and built the first cooperating line in the United States. This line extended from Lafarge south to within about 2 miles of Iola, and was operated by this cooperative bunch of farmers for several years. What else do you want? Out to a big outfit, and they took their line over at the same time and furnished them current, so it's all operated now by, well, the village of Iola owns one end of it, and the village of Lafarge owns the other end of
it. Howard Siebel, we got a meal as part of, but before that, they got it at Reedsburg. After Milwaukee Road got to Sparta, why, they used to go there for supplies. Then they built the Northwestern Railroad. That's through those tunnels from Milroy up through to Sparta on out west. Those tunnels, numbered 1, 2, and 3, I remember as a boy watching them work on the tunnels. And then when they got to running the trains, I remember they had these little, small, wood-burning locomotives. Had a smokestack, something like a turnip in shape. And two of those would pull a very short train up over those hills. That was about 9 miles from our place. I've always was interested in the Kickapoo as a source of power, because years ago an engineer from Maine came up the River Foot. He said that there's good water power on this river, as he saw in the east. And he said he could locate a power dam every 3 miles. As a matter of fact, I remember when there were 5 power dams and mills run by power from Kickapoo between Ontario and Wilton, a distance of 9 miles. Of course, that's where the wagon road. Of course, the river itself was more crooked. Now the town started as a sawmill town or a mill town. I remember when there were 4 mills inside the corporate limits of that village. There's a large sawmill that cut lumber, mostly white pine, which was rafted and ran down the river. And they made lath, shingle, and they planed into flooring, and then they cut off the rest of it into what we call block wood for fuel homes. And I never saw anything in the mill pond in those days as a boy except white pine. I never saw a tamarack, nor a hemlock, nor Norway pine. This same water power operated a large flour mill. Then the other end of the village, there was another flour mill, power from the Brush Creek. And just the edge of the village was what we called a carding mill, where they used to bring in wool from the farmers. And this mill made it into cards, long, so they could spin it easily. And some of the pioneers wove it into cloth. I've seen some of them come to town with suits made of what we call homespun. Now, there was no unemployment in those days. The town had a lot of small industries. For instance, there were 2 small concerns that made buggies, cutters, bobsleighs, and wagons. My father, being a physician, he bought a buggy at one place and the cutter at the other. And years after, they're showing that cutter to some friends of mine, they couldn't believe that it was made there. There's another small concern that made pork barrels. They got the staves from oak in the woods, and they bought the hook holes from the farmers, and they got the cattails out of the sloughs from the mill pond. And they get a carload, they would ship them. The hook pole furnished quite a lot of income for the pioneer. I remember one man named Curtis at one fall sold $90 worth of hook poles off in his new place. Now, of course, they don't use hook poles, they don't use pork barrels anymore. Then where this carding mill was, they put in a rake factory, hand rakes. The farms were small, no binders or reapers in those days. Everything was cut to the cradle, and they raked it by hand and bound it. And they were busy at that. Then the blacksmith down there, one of them, he used to make these harpoon forks, hay forks, just you see in the stores now. And most of the settlers in there, I won't say the most of them, but a great many of them, used oxen. And that's something I couldn't understand. My father always had a high-strung driving team. I'd take one of the driving horses down to Blackman's shop, they'd stand down 3 feet, no trouble, whatever, be shod. But they built a great big rack out of heavy timbers for the oxen. And they put an ox in there, put surcingles on him, string him up, and put clevises over his feet. And then he put near to the shop, you know, before they get shoes on him. The blacksmith had to make the shoes. They couldn't buy them in those days, not there at least. It took 8 shoes for an ox. Now the lumber business there was that we thought was the principal business. It was a beautiful timber. And we used to wonder, I heard the older people wonder what they was going to do when the timber was all gone. I remember my grandfather built a hotel on an early day. And after he'd been dead a long time, the people who owned the place sent for him and they went down. They showed me fence he'd built, and every fence post was red cedar, just beautiful timber. You can see how that would be to use timber like that for fence posts. When Toto cleared up his farm, he wouldn't give you white pine, but you can go there and you can get a load of logs. He'd cut the trees down, he'd cut the logs the length he wanted them, and he and his boys would help load them and give them to him if he'd just get them off the ground. He told me, he says, you know, we can't raise anything to get rid of this timber, and it seems a pity to roll it in log piles and destroy it the way so many of them are doing. I stood up in Paul Dahl's drugstore there one day, some time ago, and Paul took down a jar and he said to two young ladies standing there, he said, did you ever see any winter radishes? I stepped up and before I thought, I said, winter radishes, my eye, he said, that's ginseng. One young lady turned to me, she said, what'd you say it was? And I said, that's ginseng. Well, she, what's that? I explained to her about the plant. And well, she know, what do you know about that? I'm teaching in high school over here, and I'm teaching about all those things. I never had heard of ginseng before. But that was quite a help to the pioneers. They used to dig it and bring it to the stores. Always got the cash for it if they wanted. And been the source of income all through the growing season. The pioneer came in there in an early day. They was away from doctors, away from drugstores. And there's one valley known as Bray Valley that people through this part of the county never heard of. It came in a corner to the village there, that a road they never traveled. The Bray family came in there in an early day and settled clear at the head, almost at the foothills of the ridge. I talked with his older son years ago. He was an old man then, all bent over, leaning on a cane. And he told me the experience. He said his mother had heart trouble. He said one night his father called him. He came down and he sent him. I don't know how he got through the woods, but I know the road he went to. He had to go quite a ways to get onto a road that used to go to Hillsborough years ago. And he told him to follow that road towards Hillsborough. He'd come to a large rock standing up the side of the road. And he says, you'll see a twin ash. On the other side of the twin ash, you'll see some foxglove. He said he got there before daylight, and he sat down by the rock and waited and got light enough that he could see. He saw the twin ash. He also saw the foxglove. He dug it up and took it home. So my father steeped it on the stove, made a tea, and gave it to my mother. He says, you know, foxglove is good for a weak heart. And I just gasped. Foxglove. That's where they get their digitalis from, you know. Riding around, my father, who was a pioneer doctor, he got big enough to hold the line, so the first lesson he gave me is how to voyage quicksand, where you had to forge so many streams. And driving among those pioneers, and you'd see the one-room log houses, and hanging up the ceiling, all around you'd see a great many things they dug up in the woods. And of course, like a small boy, I thought that a little peculiar, and I said so to my father. My father didn't smile. He says, when I was your age, I thought the same thing. He says, I got to medical school and studying medicine. I was surprised to see that many of those things that those pioneers who dig in the woods, out of the woods, are good for the very things they said they were. I thought of that so many times. Many of the pioneers were men of trades. Many of them were millwrights. And they'd build a whole mill. even make the water wheel. Many of them were carpenters. And quite interesting to know where they all came from. One neighbor came from New Orleans. Others came from Bridgeport, Connecticut. Some came from Bay State, New York. They had a regular Congress of Nations, almost, in that village. Well, after the timber began to get scarce, we went into dairying. I've always thought I wrote the first cream check ever written in Vernon County. I still think that, although I couldn't prove it. But the firm I worked for built a creamery. I went down to the creamery here one day and I said to the buttermaker, charge, I said, how many buttermakers you got here can test milk by the old oil method? He says, I don't know. I know I couldn't. That is before Babcock, Dr. Babcock, had invented the Babcock test. So far as I know, that's the first creamy I know of. Down at Lafarge, where Mr. Wood lives, there were cheesemakers, but we had to send to Chicago and have a commission man get a buttermaker for us. Begin to open up those farms. As he says, we've got good cows in there. There's more money in that country now than there were when they're cutting so much timber. It's ideal. It's underlaid with limestone, pure water. Some of the pastures are up, but the rains wash off the dirt. The grass is sweet and clean. Commissioner in Chicago told us the best butter made anywhere that they bought was between Baraboo and Mississippi River. Now, it is interesting to notice about those pioneers. I wondered how they lived. I was up to one farm, pioneer, homesteader. He's putting in his potatoes. And I just amazed. That you understand when I was a boy. And I said to him, my gracious, how many potatoes have you? He says, this makes 62 bushels, but we're not through digging yet. You go into some of the pioneers and you would find a barrel of kraut. I stood in the store one day and watched a farmer's wife buy some kraut in a tin can, about the size of a can of salmon. Another woman from a farm was buying some cornmeal. And I think that two good ears would pretty fill that box. But they had abundance of everything. Every farmer raised his flour.